razón.
No, pues venga, hombre. Vamos a entrar. Gracias.
May I proceed?
Please the court. My name is Mike Sharman, and I'm the representative for the appellant, Nancy Haynes. There's a number of things that we know for certain in this case. We know that Nancy Mall, now Nancy Haynes, was sexually abused by Susan Haggerty, now Sean Haggerty, from the time that Nancy was 14. And Haggerty was 29. I'm going to use the terms, the names that they still have in constant, Nancy for the appellant, Haggerty for the appellee. We know that Nancy had filed suit under the existing statute of limitations 2 years into the 20-year statute that she had. We know that Haggerty's defense to that is the 14th Amendment, not the Virginia Constitution, but only the U.S. Constitution, that provision, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, and it's the property aspect that's being alleged. We know that the law says that the legislative acts are come with a presumption of constitutionality.
Can we talk about the statute before we get to the constitutional issue? Code section 8.01256 restricts the application of Chapter 4 to claims arising after October 1, 1977.
Yes, ma'am.
So why does the statute not answer the question?
Well, that's a circular argument. If you look at the statute, it says any new 8.01256, that looks like the very last sentence of it, any new limitation period imposed by this chapter where no limitation previously existed or which is different from a limitation existing before this chapter was enacted, shall apply only to causes or rights of action accruing on or after accruing. So then we look at the other statutes that tell us this accrues with either 20 years after majority or 20 years after being told by one of these three professionals. So that's why I'm saying that's a circular argument. The other issue is that was not raised at trial, was not an objection.
But it's a right result, wrong reason ground for affirmance as opposed to a reversal, so 525 doesn't apply. So it is on the table. But can you go back to your circular argument point?
Mm-hmm.
When Chapter 4 was introduced into the code, obviously 256 was meant to say, in so many words, this is all going forward, just the point you make. This is all prospective, the point you make with respect to 249. Then when you go through every one, and we've done this, of the Acts of Assembly that enacted and amended 249, you don't get anything that seems to rebut the post-77 prospectivity, and your cause of action accrued as of 1977, it accrued in 1975. So the point you're making, which is a good point, but it seems like the point you're making can be described as circular every bit as much as the 256 argument is circular. So we've got to figure out which of these allegedly circular arguments was the intent of the legislature. How do you persuade us that we should do the two loops, which I think is what you're suggesting?
Well, let's skip, just say 256 didn't exist for the moment.
Right.
But we still want to know, when does the cause of action accrue? Well, it accrued when Nancy was 16, 2 years after the first event. Or it could have accrued the day before Nancy turned 20 under the existing statute then. It accrued then. It also accrued under the revived statute of limitations because that cause of action died that Nancy had under the existing statute at the time these events occurred. Mm-hmm. It was revived by the legislature when the legislature extended the statute of limitations. So it accrued then. So looking at this, the 256, you look at, it's a statutory construction, I mean a statutory animal, so look at its words, and it says accrued. So it accrued under the revived statute after 1977. We also then look at, the statute has to, I believe, has to be read in context with the constitutional amendment that came out in 1995. In that constitutional amendment, the second sentence to it, Article 4, Section 14, says, no natural person shall have a constitutionally protected property right to bar a cause of action based on intentional torts as described herein on the ground that a change in the accrual date for the action has been applied retroactively or that a statute of limitations or statute of repose has expired. And if we look at 256 for the purposes that Hagerty wants to assert it, it would go totally contrary to the Constitution amendment. And I think we have to look at...
But the Constitution says we can go retroactive versus our court on that point. But it doesn't say how far retroactive. So it still bumps us into 256, which is, well, legislatively speaking, we're not going any further back than when we created this chapter to begin with, which is 77. So it doesn't seem the Constitution adds a lot of meaning to the retroactivity point of 256. It certainly does at 249.
I hear you, Your Honor. But again, let's look at when the Constitution was amended, 256 existed. And the people of the legislature, legislators who had proposed the constitutional amendment, and then the people who had proposed it, who had supplied with, saw this exact language. And it said, no natural person shall have a constitutionally protected property right to bar a cause of action based on intentional torts herein on the ground that it changed the accrual date. And that would have to be, to assert 256 as a bar, you'd have to go contrary to this constitutional amendment, which was drafted and approved after 256 was in place.
Well, counsel, there's a difference between a constitutional right and a statutory right. And the fact that the Constitution would say that you couldn't, he wouldn't have it if changed, the legislature would have to have, you are wanting us to eliminate or invalidate the statute as contrary to the Constitution, but you can have a statutory limitation on that.
You can, but that's almost another circular argument. Mm-hmm. The constitutional amendment, was specifically done to make retroactive the statutes that would set up limits. The constitutional amendment said nobody can have a statutory bar, saying that the accrual date has changed. So, yes, you're right, Your Honor, that the statute can fulfill the Constitution, or that it won't be contradictory to it. But this constitutional amendment specifically was saying nobody's going to have a statutory bar just based upon the change of accrual date.
And no, it was saying nobody had a constitutional right. I mean,
it says it can't have the bar, too. It says no natural person shall have a constitutionally protected property right to bar a cause of action. Because you were saying a statute could have a limit, which they did. And she was barred when she was 16, and she was barred when she was 20. And under 256, she'd be barred because of the earliest accrual date being held against her. But both the new statute and the constitutional amendment were saying, no. We recognize that childhood sexual abuse is an entirely different type of tort. And because of that, we want to be able to look backward in time. And I'm sorry, I don't remember which one of you had mentioned. There is no, it doesn't look to say how far back it needs to go. But that's exactly what the statute, what the new statute was designed to do, and the constitutional amendment was designed to protect. I didn't mention it right at the beginning, but I'd like to reserve 4 minutes if I might. I believe I have one more minute at this point, and I'd just like to address any others, questions that you all might have.
Could you tell me what you think we should do if we agree with you? How do we treat 256? Do we declare it unconstitutional?
No. I think it needs to be read in context with this specific, because 256 deals with many more areas other than childhood sexual abuse. Article 4, Section 14 of the Constitution only deals with childhood sexual abuse. So I don't think it is at all that it has to be struck down. I think it has to be read in context, which is what we always try to do in doing both statutory and constitutional interpretation. The body of law from Campbell versus Holt, Chase Securities, Electrical Workers versus Robbins, all of them say this mere lapse of time, which is the constitutionally protected right that Hagerty is alleging, this protracted time period. It's ironic that Campbell versus Holt, which is the first one that interprets a retroactive statute of limitations applied with the 14th Amendment, it's ironic it uses that same word. A mere protracted lapse of time does not give one a constitutional right to avoid an obligation. In this case, the obligation is Hagerty needs to be before a civil jury to stand for the wrong that Hagerty had done against Nancy for 4 years, from the time she was 14 to 18. Thank you. I'll reserve my time if I might.
All right.
May it please the court, my name is Jennifer Parrish, and this is my associate Justin Feynman, and we represent Sean Hagerty in this matter. As you all know, in March of 2014, 37 years after the expiration of the statute of limitations that was in effect applicable to this case that Ms. Haynes brought, she filed this suit, which was also 39 years after she reached the age of majority. The entire focus of the arguments before the trial court and all of the information in the appellant's brief have focused on the issue of whether or not there's a rational basis and whether or not the statute is unconstitutional under which Ms. Haynes brought the case. What we're here to argue today, however, as Justice Kelsey pointed out in his initial question, is the right result for the wrong reason issue. And we are here today to ask the court consider looking at the fact that the court did get the right result, even if the wrong reason may have been stated, because the plain language of Virginia Code Section 8.01.256 states clearly that this type of a cause of action, since it did not arise before October 1, 1977, cannot be revived. If we look at the dates here, in March of...
You mean if it did arise before 1977, it cannot be revived?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean the current cause of action could not be reinstated because this did arise. The two-year statute of limitations that was in effect at the time of Ms. Haynes' initial injury arose in 1975. According to the pleading, she turned 18 in March of 1975. So in March of 1977, the then two-year statute of limitations expired. We then get to the issue of the constitutional amendment, which Mr. Sharman wishes this court to somehow find that it affected the applicability of 8.01.256, which we contend it did not. What the constitutional amendment gave the right for is the right for the General Assembly to go in thereafter and enact or reenact a statute that allowed a retroactive application. But even by the own language of the General Assembly's actions at that time when they reenacted Section 8.01256 after the amendment, they also limited it to even a different time. If I can refer the court to I'm looking for the often we look at the evidence of legislative intent. After the General Assembly did allow the amendment to the Constitution, after it was properly before the public for a referendum, that became effective in January of 1995. The legislature then, in 1996, reenacted that subsection so that it would be valid in light of the constitutional amendment. And in the 1996 session, they passed a law, Chapter 377 of the 1996 Acts of Assembly, which was entitled An Act to Retroactively Apply Removal of the Statute of Repose in Childhood Sexual Assault Cases. And what the General Assembly said in its own legislation reenacting 8.01249 is that be it enacted that is authorized by Section 14 of Article 4 of the Constitution of Virginia, Chapter 268 of the 1995 Acts of Assembly, shall apply to all actions accruing on or after July 1991 for injury to persons resulting from sexual abuse occurring during infancy or incompetency of the person and which were or are filed on or after July 1995. So not only do we have 8.01256, which by its very clear language says that 8.01 at the time it was enacted shall not apply to any causes of action that arise before October of 1997, we then have, years later, a constitutional amendment and then a reenactment by our legislature that in its reenactment says that the retroactive statute limitations that it is now allowed to pass because of the change in the Virginia Constitution shall only apply to actions accruing after July 1991. So not only do we have the fact that the statute itself, 8.01256, barred the claim, but even if for some reason that presented, as Mr. Sharman called it, a circular argument, which we disagree with, we also have the legislative intent evidenced by that 1996 law.
Can I ask you if you are familiar with the 1991 Acts of Assembly note that was not codified that also talked about retroactivity? Section 2 of Acts of Assembly 1991, Chapter 674.
I'm not familiar with that note, Your Honor.
No problem.
I know that in 1991, that is the first time the General Assembly took it upon itself to make any different statute of limitations that would apply to childhood sexual abuse such as this. And before that, we were dealing with the two-year general personal injury statute of limitations. One issue some on the court may concern itself with would be whether or not 8.01256 applied only to the statute of limitations period, whether 2 years, 10 years, 20 years, but also whether or not the accrual itself was an issue. And I'm not sure if that's what Mr. Sharma was trying to argue when he talked about a circular argument, whether accrual was covered by this 8.01256, but I would refer the court. The court did have a number of decisions in the early 80s that looked at this issue of what was barred when this October, when 8.01256 went into effect. And one of those cases, the case of Stone versus Allen, which can be found at 232 Virginia 365, a 1986 case, clearly held that accrual itself, not just the limitations period, but when a statute of limitations accrues, also was what was being barred by 8.01256. The facts of that case are that in 1981, a plaintiff's home was damaged by a fire from a defective refrigerator, which they received in 1975. So in late 81, they filed a lawsuit for breach of warranty against the manufacturer. The defendants argued at trial that the breach of warranty claim was barred by the statute of limitations, claiming that the accrual date of that statute was governed by then, in effect, Virginia Code 8.2725. And at that point, the accrual was a date of delivery. It wasn't the date of damage. Later on, when 8.01 was enacted in 1977, the accrual date changed to the date of damage. So when this court looked at that issue back in 1986, the holding of the court was the affirmance of the trial court that there was a bar of the statute of limitations, because since 8.01246 was not effective until October 1st, 1977, then the accrual statute that was in effect prior to the enactment of that was governed by that cause of action, so the breach of warranty claim was barred. So our position is that Ms. Haynes' cause of action clearly existed prior to October 1st, 1977. It became time barred in March of 77, since the statute began to run in March of 1975. And because the General Assembly has passed 8.01256, stating that 8.01 and the statute that plaintiff is trying to rely upon in this case only applies to new causes of action after October 77, then the provisions don't apply to this case, and we're asking that the court therefore affirm the holding of the trial court for the right result, wrong reason issue. If the court chooses to do that, the court doesn't need to consider the whole issue of the constitutionality of 8.01246. But if the court chooses to look at that issue, we believe we've certainly at issue in detail in our appellee's brief, we've set forth the reasons why we contend there is not a rational basis for that statute as it is now. Certainly initially, when starting in 1991, the statute was passed, there was certainly a rational basis. There were concerns that certain people might have repressed memories from these types of injuries, and there were concerns that additional time might be needed for younger people to come to terms with what happened when they were underage and when they had to often receive medical treatment in order to recover repressed memories. But from the 1991 time, the statute has changed so much over time that by the time we get to 2013, which is the change after which the plaintiff filed this current action, we believe it was a completely irrational statute. The main reason is that in 1991, when it was first enacted, there was at least a 10-year limitation, an outside statute of repose. So at least there was an end date to when a suit could be brought. Later on, in 2011, the General Assembly increased the statute of limitations itself to a 20-year period after the time of accrual, which, of course, itself may also admittedly have a rational basis. But the point is, at the time that was enacted, there was still the very important language in the statute that required there to have been no knowledge of the events. So the language that had been inserted in the statute in 1997 was, quote, if the fact of the injury and its causal connection is not then known. So if there was a first communication by a health care provider of an injury and its causation to a prior sexual abuse, but the fact of the injury had not been known, then it makes sense that there should be this extended period of time, legitimate, rational government interest. And that all changed in 2013, because in 2013, not only do we no longer have a statute of repose at all, now we have a 20-year statute of limitations after accrual, and now we have an accrual that took out the language, if the fact of the injury and its causal connection is not even known.
Why could that still be rational? Yeah. Couldn't a legislator say, you know what, given the vagaries of repressed memory, until a patient actually has some validation from an experienced and competent professional, it's natural for someone to sit on their rights because they're just not sure until that validation is given. I don't find that to be irrational. It seems quite wise to me.
Well, and certainly we concede, Your Honor, that rational basis is a very heavy burden for us to bear. We concede we don't have to do it in this case, but...
You might.
But we might.
Keep going.
And to the extent that we do, the problem with the current statute is that the issue of repressed memories that Your Honor just talked about is not involved at all. It allows for an arbitrary result, as we have here, where someone who had full knowledge over the years...
The statutes are not written for individuals. They're written for the public at large. So if there's a rational basis that, generally speaking, victims of this kind of alleged abuse, it's rational for them to wait for validation from a professional before making such an accusation. If that's a rational public policy, why would we declare it constitutionally irrational?
Our contention is that based upon the current language now, since the 2013 amendments, there essentially is no statute of limitations at all.
Okay, let's stop right there. you know that there's no statute of limitations on the criminal side for felonies.
Yes, Your
correct?
Honor.
Correct? Is that rational? Is it rational to have no statute of limitations for felonies on the criminal side?
I think that could certainly be considered something that has a rational basis because the standard of proof is so much higher than in a civil case. You've got beyond a reasonable doubt of proof. You've got that protection in there. So I would never argue there was no rational basis for that, Your Honor.
Okay. So let's say hypothetically the General Assembly were to say that cases of this general nature are essentially the civil flip side of the of a criminal wrong, because typically it would be criminal behavior if it was brought under 18.2. So if it's your argument is that this is irrational, but it is rational to have no statute of limitations for felonies, and the first distinction, the only distinction I've heard you make so far, is based upon the standard of proof that's required.
We are looking at all of the civil potential causes of action. I'm not aware of any civil cause of action in the Commonwealth of Virginia for which there is no statute of limitations.
I'm not saying there is. It is a hypothetical question.
And there are many civil statute of limitations in place that relate to criminal conduct as
well. But if the General Assembly were to say that there are certain classes of civil actions that are so inextricably bound with criminal activity that we are going to just simply repeal the statute of limitations for them, your argument would be that that's irrational.
My argument would be that that is an arbitrary rule. Why would you choose that as opposed to all of the other criminal items that may be out there?
I just said why, because it's inextricably linked to criminal activity.
I think that's one of those where the courts have to decide whether they agree whether that is or is not a rational basis. Our argument would be that because there are so many...
If we accept your argument, that's the bottom of the slippery slope that we would have to come to. Because you're asking us to find that this is irrational by the General Assembly, as I read it, solely because of the passage of time. But again, on the criminal side, we can bring criminal action 50 years. We can bring you can have a charge filed against you, an indictment returned 50 years after a crime has been committed. So you need to have a consistency between those two, or explain to me how it is that one can be rational and the other is irrational.
Well, I think that in addition to the difference in the burdens of proof and the consequences in a civil versus a criminal case, we're looking at an entire area of the law where if you compare this to other civil cases that involve reprehensible conduct, civil cases for wrongful death where there has been a murder, where there's been a criminal conviction of murder, and then there's a civil case for wrongful death, you've still got a preponderance of the evidence, those cases have statute of limitations. They have a 2-year statute of limitations. So this would be the only thing ever the General Assembly decided was somehow more reprehensible than other things, and that's what we contend is not rational. Doesn't mean that some courts may not think it's rational, but here we have a history of a limitation beginning in 1991 with some expansion from how it had been previously. We then have changes over time that essentially make it as of today so that there is no statute of limitations. In this case, Mr. Haggerty is 72 years old. There was 18 more years left where, under this particular statute, which we say doesn't apply anyway, could have brought this cause of action. And it allows for a situation where any person could sit on their rights for a number of years, for example, suffering for depression for 40 years, and then they see that the statute has changed or that there's no limitations, so they decide after 40 years to go talk with a new social worker or a new licensed clinical social worker and say, you know, I've been suffering for depression for 40 years, and I was sexually abused, and that's why I'm depressed.
Justice question, satisfactory, and your time has expired. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Sharman, you have 3 minutes and 27 seconds left.
Justice Kelsey, I believe you had brought up the issue of the acts of the assembly. And in Starnes versus Cayuette, this court's opinion, at page 212, it says redefinition of the accrual date of a cause of action for Section 1 in Acts 1991, Chapter 674, inherently applies retroactively. And I think that also addresses a number of the other questions that have been given, too, because it uses that term, redefinition of the accrual date.
Well, it clearly applies retroactive. That's why it was held unconstitutional. But the question is, retroactive how far? Does it bump into 256?
Yes, and in your precedent is that this is a redefinition of the accrual date. So it's not 1977. It's 2013. It's the redefinition of the accrual date. It is no longer that accrual date. So, and that's, my arguments on that point is not going to get any better than that. I mean, that just is. It's now your decision as to what to do with that. Kopolchik versus Catholic Diocese, page 340, mentioned that the intent of the framers of the constitutional amendment, that for section 14, and of the people ratifying it, was to empower the General Assembly to remove the constitutionally protected right of a defendant to bar a cause of action. So again, that's your precedent. Justice Mims, you had asked about, well, couldn't it be that the civil statute would be just as rational if it had no statute of limitations as the Virginia's criminal, which I was searching for my list of states that indeed have no statute of limitations on the civil cause of action. I wasn't able to find that. But there are, I believe, at least five states at this point that have either by their Supreme Court.
I don't have to be convinced that the General Assembly's action was rational.
Yes, and so like you said, backing up from there, that means this is rational for their choice in making this determination. There is no irrationality to deal with the fact that the burden of a childhood sexual abuse is a lifetime burden, that using one of the analogies, I believe it was the South Dakota court said, imagine that a child had been pricked with a pin. It was a small injury at the time. They didn't understand the significance of it. But that carried a disease with it that grew over time. And when they were older, a more mature adult, the fruition of that injury was there. And then they realized it. That's the philosophical grounding to this expansion of the statute of limitations. There's so much that occurs, so much of the destruction and the fallout from childhood sexual abuse that is not brought to mind when a person is 20 or 25 or 35. And a lot of times, as the briefs have mentioned, the people may not realize, they may not connect the problem they are having with the sexual injury that had occurred before. And they need the professional to tell us. We now have a statute that gives an objective criteria for when does the statute run, either 20 years after majority or 20 years after the first time a professional has mentioned anything to them. I have 17 seconds to answer any more questions you all might have.
No, you're over 22 seconds.
Oh, but bring this backwards. No, but thank you for allowing me to go over.
Very, very nice try, though. Thank you for your argument. Call the next case.